Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Seriously Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. The Seriously Risky Business Podcast and newsletter, that's the work we do here at Risky Biz, which is all about trying to inform policymakers about all things cybersecurity. The newsletter is written, of course, by Tom Uren, who joins me now.
G'day, Patrick. How are you?
G'day. And we'd like to thank our founding corporate sponsor, Proofpoint, for supporting this work, and also the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative, because they've been helping us too. What we do in this podcast is we essentially recap the analysis work that Tom's done that goes into the weekly newsletter and, have a bit of a chat about that. And Tom, you've covered a couple of things this week that we're going to talk about. Perhaps this first one we won't go into you know, super high detail, because we did talk about this in the main Risky Biz podcast yesterday. But there was that absolutely sensational report put out by Analyst One, a guy called John DiMaggio, who essentially went undercover with Lockbit. And he wound up on their Tox server by doing a job interview with them, flunking it, but they kept him around anyway. And he was able to just get close to these guys really, really easily. And you zeroed in on something in your coverage that I also noticed, right? Which is that, geez, it was easy to infiltrate these guys, which means there must be some pretty good disruption options when it comes to, you know, trying to release the hounds on these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of staggering how easy it was. And government organizations often take everything to the nth degree, which for a lot of cases they should. But in this case, John DiMaggio just went, I'll just try it and see if it works. And it did.
Yeah, we spoke about this before we got recording, which is he just YOLO'd it. He just said, I'll get a job interview. Whereas what you said is like, if ASD were gaming this out, they would have a big, you know, they'd sit there with a pen and, you know, with a whiteboard or whatever and say, but what if we get the job?
Yeah, that's right. What's the response? And I would have thought that perhaps they might even want to get the job.
Yeah.
And like, how are we going to navigate it so we get the job but don't actually do any work that contributes to harming other people?
Yeah. And how much work do we have to contribute that does harm other people before we get access to the stuff where we can do some real damage? And yeah, that's a whole
And they're tricky dilemma. Questions, right? They're not easy. You can spend a lot of time just chewing over that before you actually do anything. Whereas
this guy just went, oh, well. As you point out too, he doesn't speak Russian. He went in there pretending to speak German. Or we don't know, maybe he does speak German, but he went in there saying, oh, well, do you speak English? Because I'm German. And they spoke. They all communicated in broken English.
Yeah, it's just brilliant in that it's so simple and yet it just works.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly clear. It sounds like he had a number of personas as well. So it's you know, the YOLO approach worked more than once.
Point is, it turns out you can infiltrate the largest ransomware crew on the planet by just rocking up and saying, greetings, fellow criminals, and they open their arms. So that's nice to know. That is nice to know. Now, another thing that you did is you took a look at a detailed report released by the Ukrainian government about Russian cyber activity in Ukraine, against Ukraine. And again, you know, what we've got here are claims of like coordination between Russia's, you know, cyber operators and their other forces. But really, it just looks like what they're doing is pointing to the same type of activity that Microsoft's pointed to in the past, which just looks like common tasking, which isn't really what you and I mean when we talk about coordination. When we talk about coordination, we're talking about using cyber, you know, in coordination with like ground forces to achieve an effect together that you would not be able to achieve just with one or other of those things. So the Viasat hack is an excellent example. You cannot use missiles to disrupt people's access to a satellite service. I mean, you might be able to launch a missile into space to try to take out some satellites, but that's a whole other drama. So cyber is the option then. And, you know, Russia timed that perfectly. Viasat access went down the night before the invasion. So that was a really great example of a coordinated cyber action. But what seems to have popped up ever since this very early stage of the invasion is just Russia is attacking civilian infrastructure. Russia is attacking stuff like, electricity infrastructure. And at the same time, there are cyber attacks against, the same infrastructure, which isn't really what we think of when we think coordination, right?
Yeah, to me, coordination is so the example that ASD has talked about is using a cyber operation to disrupt communication and force ISIS fighters to leave a command post. And then they're struck by conventional weapons and are also surveilled as they travel around on the ground. So that's
a complementary
action.
The purpose of that one is to follow them to the secondary command posts, which they didn't know the location of, and then hit them as well, right? So this was an example of where you were able to use cyber to do something that you could not have otherwise done.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that if you're just using... Well, that's the whole point of modern warfare. That's why you've got tanks and planes and infantry. They all do slightly or vastly different things. And by combining them, you get something that's more than the sum of the parts. So almost everything described in the Ukrainian report is we attacked something at the same time with both missiles and with a cyber operation. Yeah. There's not a huge amount of detail. So it's possible that there are times where they're doing something that enhances an effect. I think the example you said was maybe when we were talking earlier was perhaps you can disrupt an electricity network with some sort of cyber operation so that a missile causes even more damage or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, before we got going, I'm like, an example might be, and it's really theoretical, right? But you might do some sort of cyber action that results in the grid being loaded in a particular way such that if you strike it in this one point, you do more damage and cause some sort of cascading failure. Now, obviously, I'm not an electrical engineer. I can't tell you if that's possible, but that's the type of theoretical made-up scenario that we're talking about when we mean coordination.
Yeah, and I think in terms of this war, there's some...
Oh, actually, sorry, Tom, I did think of another one, which is if you could use some sort of cyber action to cause some sort of facility to be evacuated so that you could then strike it, that would also be cyber enabling you to do something with your kinetic forces that you would have been... say there's a kindergarten next door to something you want to blow up. You do some cyber thing, the kindergarten gets evacuated, and then you get to blow up the thing. I mean, maybe that's not a great example because you could just ring them up and say, we're about to... lob a missile next door, but you get my point, right? Which is the whole point is about doing it in conjunction to do something that you can't just do by lobbing missiles and things.
Yeah, and I think in terms of warfare in general, we've got good evidence the Russians did that kind of what I would call properly or truly coordinated attack right at the beginning of the war. But the Western examples, the complaints by Western militaries have been that it really took a long time. And so perhaps in the pace of a real war, there's just not the time to plan those operations and conduct them in a way that keeps up with the pace of warfare on the ground.
Well, I think it's also that Russia's plan kind of went out the window, right? And so you look at where they were able to actually do this sort of coordinated stuff. Now, it wasn't just Viasat. There were ISPs and telcos and stuff that were targeted too right at the onset of the invasion. And the idea was to really disrupt the ability of the Ukrainians to communicate with each other. You know, obviously, you can use stuff like EW to take down radios and whatnot, but disrupting the civilian comms infrastructure would rob them of a backup. Okay, so this was a really well thought out, perfectly executed cyber operation that was designed to really make life easier for invading forces. And that makes sense because this was obviously something that they planned. Yep. The problem is they expected it to, they planned for 2 weeks. They didn't plan for a year, right? So that's why I think, and now at this point, I kind of feel like the lack of a coordinated cyber strategy is because they just generally lack a strategy at the moment. They're just trying to, Russia's just trying to grind it out in Ukraine. But it doesn't really feel like they have much of an initiative, much of a strategy, much of anything at all. So it's hard to think beyond just throwing the kitchen sink at civilian infrastructure. It's hard to think of what strategy they could even come up with at this point.
Well, I mean, I kind of disagree in the sense that I think that what they are doing is the strategy of just throw everything that we have at everything at the same time and same place. I'm being a bit pedantic there, so I don't think I agree. I don't think it's a winning strategy, and I agree. It's also hard to see what they would do particularly differently. And to me, this comes back to, in a real war, is it realistic to expect these kinds of tightly integrated operations that can get you more? Is that something we should expect our relative cyber commands to do? How much money should we be putting in for that? Or is it just unrealistic to expect it? You know,
but I think, you know, it's like when there's a clear objective. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that makes sense. Like, say Russia were to have a brainwave and decide to have another go at invading Kyiv, you know, from Belarus or something like that. If you're actually planning this sort of action, you might sit down and actually think of stuff you can do with cyber that's going to work as according to this plan. But I think we agree, right? Which is once you're in the position where you're slogging it out World War One style in trenches in the Donbass, cyber doesn't really mean a great deal.
No, it's. I mean, the Gruck and I had a whole discussion about how you would try and incorporate cyber operations into sort of tactical military action, and it became quite hard to think of things where you could regularly use it that would actually make a significant difference. Just, you know, the effects you have compared to missiles or bullets even are just so different. And when you get away from an IT environment where the IT is really the key, then it's just has less relevance.
Now, look, another thing that you wrote about briefly in one of the short sections, it was funny because we didn't include this in the weekly Risky Biz show because I figured I'd be better off talking to you about this one, is there's a general who's the head of France's Cyber Defense Command, Aymeric Bonmaison, I think is the general's name. He's warning all the Europeans, you're letting US Cyber Command go and do hunt forward in your networks. You're exposing yourself to American intelligence collection. Now, you and I both think that America is extremely unlikely to use this sort of outreach program with its allies to do collection. I agree with you on that because I think it would be a political catastrophe if they were trying to do some sort of intelligence collection from an ally or partner's, you know, critical infrastructure. The cost benefit, the risk analysis there just makes it a non-starter from my point of view. That said, obviously, anytime you're going to partner with a much more powerful nation with a very sophisticated sort of cyber capability, yeah, I mean, maybe you have to keep that in mind, but it seems like it just seems like an odd thing to raise, don't you think?
I didn't think it was odd at all, in the sense that I think he hits on something that will be a concern of partner countries. So the Cyber Command gets asked by other countries to come in and help search for, I guess it's threat hunting on their networks, right? And so I think that I would be amazed if there hadn't been a discussion in those countries about, well, you know, we're going to get something out of it, but what are the risks? I think it's a sensible discussion to have. Now, I think that there's...
But who would have that discussion and conclude that it's an unacceptable risk, right? Like, that's the part that I think
clearly the French, I think. I think there's many countries that are wary of the US, right? And I think that there's a perception that they're just an all-encompassing surveillance
behemoth, global, like the IC equivalent of a vampire octopus, which is the term for Goldman Sachs, right?
Yeah,
the vampire octopus of surveillance.
So I think it's an understandable worry. I think that there's the countries that Cyber Command particularly calls out are all Eastern European ones. So Ukraine, obviously, Estonia, Lithuania. They're all countries where the fear of Russia vastly outweighs the fear of the US.
Yeah, now, I think, but that's kind of what I meant about the risk analysis side of it, right?
Like, and so what immediately struck me was, I agree, I don't think it makes any sense for Cyber Command to use this as an intelligence gathering exercise. There's a value in those operations that is greater than the intelligence you would gain, I think.
Yes.
And so really they need a charm offensive to try and convince a whole lot of countries that may be on the fence. Like, there's going to be a spectrum of countries, right? Some are like, yes, please come in. There'll be some Iran say, no way.
And there's a spectrum of countries. I don't see Iran welcoming US Cyber Command with open arms. But I think this comes back to the central point here, which is that they're allies, right? And if you can't trust your ally to help you, I don't know. I get it. But I also think seeing this reported as like, oh, you know, a French general says the Americans are going to spy on you, you know, using their hunt forward stuff as a Trojan horse. I just think it's a bit dumb.
Yeah, I think the sentiment is correct. The reality is it's not going to happen, though.
No, and I mean, I think if NSA is going to do collection against these countries, which it probably does, it just is not going to use this program. It doesn't need them.
Yeah,
it doesn't need this sort of access.
Yeah,
right?
But I also think that there's allies and then there's allies.
Yeah.
I think there's a vast spectrum of countries.
Well, and we spoke about this earlier, didn't we, just before we got going, about how there's every chance that we're going to see these types of programs being extended into other parts of the world where perhaps the United States is viewed a little bit more suspiciously. So countries in Southeast Asia, for example.
Yeah, so that was the first thing I actually thought of. Like, you know, you've had some success in Eastern Europe, Russia's behaving badly, and that would no doubt incentivize countries to get on board. The longer-term strategic competitor is China. And
yes.
There's a whole lot of countries in the region which are, I don't think, as close to the US as those Eastern European countries. Mm-hmm. And they're probably, at least at this stage, not quite as worried about China. So I think there's space for a charm offensive. You know, what does that look like? The US and Australia already, and Japan already, do capacity building in the region. I think there's, you know, perhaps it's a moderately long road to get there, but I think it's really worth pursuing.
Yeah, I mean, we were discussing as a hypothetical Indonesia. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Indonesia, and they are certainly, generally speaking, most Indonesians are pretty prejudiced against Chinese people, okay? And very, very rabidly anti-communist, and there's some horrible history there if anyone cares to look at what happened in Indonesia in 1965. But anyway, I guess the point is, even though you would ask the average Indonesian what they think about the United States, and you might not get a very favorable sort of opinion, if you ask them, would you take assistance from the United States if it meant protecting yourself against the Chinese, they would probably agree to it, you know, because their fear of China is such that they would probably do a deal with a country that they view quite suspiciously if it would help.
Yeah, I think there's definitely opportunities. I think it's something worth pursuing. And I think part of the problem is that people who can make those decisions often don't know what they don't know. You know, they can see a fear like this, and it's hard to address it because it seems like an intangible bogeyman to some extent. So I think there's some work to get over that hurdle.
Yeah, and of course, I don't want anyone thinking that the United States wouldn't collect against an ally, right? I'm not saying that, because of course they do.
I said, there's allies and allies.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm just saying they're not going to do it this way. Because
yes.
Really, you know, if someone did cite an example of them abusing this sort of access to do like espionage, that would wrap up the whole program and they'd lose that forward visibility, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's in it for the United States, right? They get to get out there, see what their adversaries are using in different environments. So I think the hunt forward stuff is a win-win. By all reports through political channels, it's actually been quite successful as well. So I hope this frog hasn't scared off too many future participants. But Tom Uren, that is actually it for our discussion this week. It's been a pleasure to chat to you, my friend, as always. And we'll do it again week after next, because you're on break next week.
Yeah, that's right. Good talking to you, Pat.